people who love them.
Hello, welcome back. This is The Thing About Cars, coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia. As always, recording in Strongbox West. Around the table, we've got
Becca,
Tim,
Ben,
and I'm Mickey. Thanks for listening. Got a pretty full agenda today, and I'm just going to jump right into it. Let's first talk about something that Becca wrote up there, pull apart. One of my favorite things to talk about. What have you got in mind, Becca?
I just had new things to add to your list of why not to like them.
Okay.
And one of them, people might have varying opinions on, but one of the things I discovered up there is that there's an age restriction on people allowed to go back there.
Interesting.
So I can understand, especially with how litigious everybody is nowadays. It's what you looked at me funny. Quick, I'm going to sue you.
Right.
We also complain about kids not being involved with cars as much, or, you know, just the culture of cars changing. When I was a kid, one of the things that brought me into it was cataloging car parts from junkyards and being the helper. You hold the tool or you carry something around. And it bothered me that they say you have to be at least 16. Well, at that point, you've already got a car. You're already, you know, you're practically an adult already. You've already got your likes and dislikes. It's not like you can be as involved growing up like I was.
Right.
And that bothers me. I felt like kids who could be involved in that are missing out on a lot of it.
I agree. I mean, it seems stupid to restrict that kind of thing. I understand the litigious angle, and I wish people would stop being so paranoid about every little thing. I also wish that people would not be so trigger happy on lawsuits.
Yeah.
Exactly. But as a parent, I mean, I'm well aware of the dangers that a junkyard would pose for my children. I would sit there and nag on them constantly and knowing they'll probably still get hurt. And right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go put a Band-Aid on it, or I'll get them a shot if it was metal, or, and then I'll say, see, that's why you listen to me and you don't touch it.
Right.
You know, it.
You know, there was a time when I was young and I was old enough to be using a chainsaw. So I was still a teenager. But I remember nicking my foot on a stationary chainsaw that was sitting on the ground. And I just walked past it. And it was off. There was nothing running, right? So,
but it's sharp, yeah.
But it's sharp. And my ankle brushed up against the chain, and I had this really nice scar as a result of it. And what did we do back in those days? We grabbed a handful of dirt and rubbed it in the wound and just kept on working. And most people these days would be shocked to find out that that's what happened. But when did we get so?
Yeah. Nowadays, they would be suing the manufacturer of the chainsaw for not making it safe for people to walk by when it was off.
Right.
But yeah, when we were growing up, it's a life lesson. Ouch, go get a Band-Aid. And unlike your family, my family liked to clean everything out with gasoline. Oh my God, stories. But, you know, you throw a Band-Aid on it and you learn the lesson from the pain. You don't go around finding who can I sue about this.
So pull apart turned you away because you had your kids.
Well, it was one of those where I had gone up and I had perused for too long and I needed to go get the kids. So I brought them back up. And she's pointing at this sign, but there are about 500 signs plastering everywhere. And there is no way, if I were to stand there and read every sign, I could be there for an hour.
Right.
The information I had been looking for was nowhere to be found, and no one could answer it. So, yeah, when I brought them up there to be my little helpers, and she said, no, you can't do that. And I both understand it, and I'm both, you know, angered by it.
Well, now's the time to get them fake IDs.
Just say they're very short people.
Right, exactly.
And that's, I'm sure, a protected class, and no one can say anything out loud about it if you're
Are you picking on my kids? They have a growth disorder and just act all angry.
No, don't even say the word kids. Just teach them to say, have you got something wrong? Have you got something against short people? And that way, if the child says it, then you don't even have to enter the picture.
Right. Well, they're still my kids. They could be 8 or 80, and they're still my kids. Yeah. The other thing that I had big issues with, just the other people that go up there. I had been working on a project with the front grille for the Jeep. And at one point, I was just getting annoyed, and I thought, fine, I'm just going to go get another grill.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and that way, if I screw something up, I tend to like to screw up something that isn't the original component anyways. That right. way, worst case scenario, or if I need to sell it or whatever's going on. So I went up there and there were, I believe, a total of, there were about 10 Liberties up there of the KJ generation. Only two of them had the right grill because it changed where the fog lights were incorporated either into the bumper or the grill.
Oh, yeah.
There were two there, but one person had just busted his way through the grill to get behind something instead of just unscrewing the screws because, you know, that's right. just too hard to do. Someone else had thrown the grill into the back of the Liberty, and I don't know if it was the same person or another person, started picking up the wheels and tires and flinging it into the back, crushing the grill. So oh, I had geez. Gone all the way up there. There were only two available and both destroyed.
Oh.
So
I'm trying to make some sort of smart ass comment on the notion that there are 10 Liberties in a junkyard.
and you know what? That's another part that I should complain about. This one Liberty that other than it was a year older than mine was practically identical. So this was a real surreal experience for me with some of this, but it still had writing on the window and it basically talked about
Becca was here.
Yes, I should have drawn Kilroy in a bunch of places, right? Mm. It noted rough start, dead battery, and I'm looking at this written on the window, and I said, basically, this car could have been saved with a new battery and a tune-up, but now it's being picked apart like carrion, and you know, which is you know what birds of prey eat,
right? Yes.
Or sure. Vultures eat, yeah.
We know what carrion is.
Yes. Not everybody. Yeah. I don't
it's
know.
It's the thing you do when you have a bag and you want to get on a plane quickly.
Right.
That's carry on. A bag
of old meat. Yes.
Of old
yes.
meat.
That's carry on, not carry. I'm used to riding with my kids. I have to explain every time I use the word carrion. Anyways, this poor car that looked just like the one I spend a lot of time in now, it's being picked apart because someone couldn't be bothered to do simple things with it. And it bothered me.
Well, maybe they just made that judgment call that we're always talking about. You know, at what point do you decide you don't want to keep a car anymore?
A tune-up and a battery.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
We're not even talking framework here. We're, you know.
Right. But if they say it won't start, you know, you don't know if that's because
it said dead battery.
Dead battery. Okay.
And rough idle.
Well,
no, runs rough.
But that could be that it runs rough because someone majorly overheated it and now everything inside the engine is warped and it's basically, you know, beyond repair.
Mm.
You know, you never know. You know,
I think I would use more drastic words, but you never right. know. You never know.
And it depends on, you know, who they were trying to sell that to.
And whoever wrote it.
Project car junkyard. For you, it just runs rough.
The junkyard is where it was going.
Right. Yeah. And somebody, whoever wrote that might not know all those little root causes either. They just might know this thing is screwed.
Right. Yeah.
But then why wouldn't you write that on the, I don't know. The verbiage that they had used bothered me. But then again,
they ought to come
up
with a code word to write up on those windshields that says essentially this thing is screwed.
Right.
Right.
Engine toast or something like that, right? Or, I don't know.
Right. Or, you know, perfect car to find out. There's a debate online. Does a Hemi fit in a Liberty? Some say yes, some say no.
So moving along, this reminds me that Ben pointed out a used car for me because I'm sort of keeping an eye out for a new used car if I can afford it. And Ben found a, what did you find? An RX?
That last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a 1982 RX-7. It looks pretty sharp and clean, although the ad said the interior needed some love.
Right.
But the big thing was it didn't have an engine.
No engines.
But it was only $900.
$900. So what engine can I squeeze into an RX-7 body?
Yeah, that's a tricky one because it was designed around the rotor, which doesn't take up a lot of space.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's a very low nose.
Yeah. And it's a topic I've tried to bring up before because it's something I've never done that I would like to delve into. What are the ins and out of engine swaps?
Well, I know that on like the last generation of the actual RX-7, you can, like so many things, drop an LS motor into it.
Shut up. See, I can't even say my catchphrase on Ben, Mike, and, though.
Becca does not like the LS Wappanoshians.
Right.
And even if you've got enough length and width, you can always put a little bulge or a cutout or something.
Yeah.
You know,
sure, baby. I like your bulge.
You know, yeah.
Yes. See, all the chicks like the bulge.
All the chicks
on the hood. On the hood.
I could put a blown, short block in there or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but there's not enough space for that.
So you're gonna blow your bulge?
Hush.
I'm sorry.
Somebody reeled back in.
I apologize.
I mean, I would think, I'm trying to remember back to the last time I looked inside the engine compartment of a first gen RX-7.
Right.
I mean, definitely a V6, I would think.
I would think so.
Yeah. Possibly a 4-cylinder. Yeah, you know, and if you don't want to do an LS swap, you could drop in a Ford Coyote motor, maybe.
I like
you
know, it.
There we go. There we go.
Oh, yeah. But they're tend to be a lot taller around
Coyotes
the valve cover area.
Coyotes are, yes. I would think too big. But what about a Fox 5.0 or a modular?
Right.
See, those are the notions I'm playing with because they're smaller, and everybody goes, they're old, outdated.
Well, there's that question: do you want to have to modify the hood or not? So yes, do you really, does it make sense to put yourself in that position to have to modify the hood?
And when you're talking about a V8 motor, it's generally not the height, but the width.
Right.
And
do I want to be the kind of person who drives around with that?
So many comments.
right. But otherwise, I'm sure I could find a Wankel to fit in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you want to play with Apex seals every 75,000 miles or the rotary madness of once you start it, you can't shut it off for 5 minutes until it totally warms up.
What?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. If you, depending on especially the age condition of the motor.
Yeah.
If you start it up and it runs in the full enrichment cycle of a cold startup.
Yeah.
And then shut it off, it will have basically flooded itself. And sometimes have a very hard time starting back up.
Hmm.
And if you go to a Mazda RX-7 forum, you can find plenty of people who have had to go through all kinds of issues sometimes it comes down to the point of pulling out all the spark plugs, turning it over to try to get the spent fuel out. So of course, that's after disconnecting the fuel system. And
so it becomes an involved process.
Right. And then depending on the condition of your apex seals, which are the rotary motor equivalent of cylinder rings.
Yes.
Piston rings, I should say. You may have to drop a little bit of oil into the combustion chambers so that they get enough compression to then start. It can be.
That's a headache.
Yeah. There's a reason why Mazda doesn't make the rotary motor anymore.
Wow. I'm surprised nobody came up with some kind of venting system to get around that.
Well, the problem is that the engine doesn't know that it's flooded.
Right.
Right. That's
it. Well, it was 1982. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. And back then it's still carbureted. Yeah.
So I'm talking about a manual venting system, not a.
Well, that's basically, stopping the fuel flow one way or another and, popping the spark plugs out. That's
right. To forego that, though.
Which reminds me of another thing. We're talking about this with regard specifically to the Wankel engine, but I've also heard that anytime you start a regular car.
Mm-hmm.
That you should wait till it warms up before you turn it off again. That turning on a car and then turning it off right away is not good for the car.
Huh.
I still think that's more old school. I still apply it.
I think so too.
They kind of argue, but I'm very old school mentality. So.
Right. I'm still of that mentality too. Of once I start it up, I'll keep it running till it's totally warmed up.
But when you're talking warm up, some people think the air is blowing hot. And no, I argue it's when the RPMs drop, and that's 20 to 30 seconds sometimes.
Right, well, it depends on how far it drops. Yes.
Right.
Because
there's
depending on when it's fully up to operating temperature, let's say over 140 degrees coolant temperature, depending on what your ECU thinks. As it was programmed by the manufacturer.
Right.
When it goes to normal, fuel enrichment instead of cold start enrichment.
Right.
And, right.
Yeah. And the problem with, restarting it when it's cold is, since it does run richer then, you often can get that extra fuel washing down the oil that's on the inside of your cylinders, and you get more wear that way. So there's a lot of schools of thought that, although, I think generally the more modern the vehicle, the more you can get away with.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, the advances in metallurgy that goes into engines, you know, that's been pretty big. And with computer controlled fuel systems, you know, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But remember, I want to rip my fuel injection system out of the Mustang and take it down to CARB.
Right. But what's your goal for doing that?
Ripping out everything computer controlled that I didn't design and install.
Okay. Just from a control freak standpoint. I mean, are you trying to get, I mean,
Mickey's having a field day with that one. He is just laughing. Yes, exactly. And he's asked questions before. Yes, I want to thoroughly control my car. I want it to be more than a car. It's an extension of me.
Okay.
So it's,
I actually admire this thought. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, you should be able to tweak your car any way you want to do it.
That's funny. I'll mention that. I actually just sent Becca an invite for a Facebook group called the Carburetor Appreciation Society.
Oh, wow.
And there are some guys in there that there was a post. They're always posting pictures of different carburetors and things. Sure. You know, but
just
there was
not a Holley.
There was one post that was a picture of the throttle and mixture knobs in an airplane.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and yes. Somebody said, about, wouldn't it be cool if you could do that on cars too? And these guys were going on about how they would love to be able to manually adjust all this different stuff in the intake system.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to.
Right.
I like having some of that done for me.
Right.
Yes.
I want to do it all. I want to control the aspect.
You want to drive your car like you're flying a plane.
Well, and I've been accused of the interior of my car looking like an airplane cockpit, but I want to have more control of what's going on, be more involved in the process. I don't want to ride a couch down a highway. I want the experience with the car.
Well, you could still do that with a fuel injection system if you went with a standalone system.
That was me making noises, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
and that not only can you
standalone?
Yes. FMUs, the old FMUs.
Oh, yes,
well,
yes.
Or, you know, like, you know, like a lot of what's used in the racing industry, you know, like a Motec system or, yes, you know, and I'm sure there's lots of, there's a company here in Atlanta that I know that if you have a certain car, they have, not only a wiring harness to plug in a modern system to, you know, plug and play with it, and also a starting tune for you. And then, you know, with a little bit of knowledge and a laptop, you can, see, you can dial in your timing at in however many degrees you want across the full RPM range, how much you want, how much advance or retard you would like at a particular RPM, how much your fuel enrichment wants to be at a particular RPM.
And it would end up being way more efficient than a carburetor.
Exactly.
Depending on who's driving the car. But, yeah. But I mean, my car is still running with the ECU and everything. And we're talking about the Mustang, obviously. But on the rare occasion that it shows up at my friend's shop, and it's usually just for tires or something. Not a lot of people get to touch this car.
Right.
He will open the hood and start calling people over because of things like the Steeda timing adjuster that I have installed on there, that while the ECU is still in the car and all that, I can't manually adjust unless I add this little toy to the front. So he'll bring people over and have them look at the weird, odd stuff installed so that I can adjust the timing, like you were saying, with this little gear while the ECU's still there.
Okay. Yeah. So there's been all kinds of workarounds that it came up with, especially in early fuel injection systems, where the individual, well, I should say the aftermarket tuning community couldn't figure out a way to break the code that was put in there by the manufacturer.
Well, and this was early OBD2. This was only the second year of OBD2 because this is a 97 Mustang.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
That's, yeah. But yeah, I'm sure. So that's
sorry,
part of
yes.
it. You know, you can, like I said, there's, I guess, many different ways to skin a cat, so to speak.
Okay, but let's not skin cats.
So I have a question that was posted to my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. I asked my friends to give us car questions to work with, and one of them is sort of the chief member of the Peanut Gallery when he asks, if you're driving at the speed of light and you turn on your headlights, what happens?
It doesn't light your way.
Well, I know from a pure physics perspective, I know the answer to this question. But what do we want to tell my friend Ben Wood what happens?
Wait, are you truly traveling at the speed of light, or are we going to start talking about mass?
If you're
because your mass is going to take more energy than the particles of the light.
You're truly hypothetically traveling at the speed of light.
Okay,
truly.
So we are matching.
You're riding an electron. Uh-huh.
We are not talking about how much energy it takes to move the mass or all of that.
You're
just truly.
A strict adherent to relativity, nothing can actually move faster than the speed of light.
So something in front of you would see your lights on, but you wouldn't know it?
No, because if you're a true adherent of relativity, you would be moving with your lights on. And so say you're moving at the speed of light and the light coming out of your headlights is moving at the speed of light.
Right.
And someone standing on the side of the road watching this happen is still looking at you and your headlights and it still looks like.
Well, that's why I was saying it looks like the lights are on, but you can't see it. So it's not projecting a beam out in front of you is what I'm saying. Right. It's not lighting your way, but they're lit.
Well, if nothing can violate the speed of light, then nobody will be able to tell that they're on because that light will not have left them. Except unless you're behind the lights, maybe.
they won't know that you're coming until you've hit them.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me pull up the
actual physics. if the light energy is not leaving the lights, then it is perhaps accumulating in them. The filament burns out really quickly because that undispatched light is going to be building heat.
Hmm.
Right. I'm trying to pull up the reference that I found. But
that's kind of what I was thinking. It's accumulating in the headlight area itself, but not.
Again, you go back to the notion of is light a particle or is light a wave, a waveform? You know, is light an energy or is light an actual thing?
It behaves like both.
Oh, are you moving at the speed of light in a vacuum or in a medium?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Those are all the questions.
Are we talking about cars still?
This would be the thing about physics.
So here's the answer according to physlink.com. And this was answered by a woman named Nicole. Don't know her last name. But the question is, if you're in a car traveling at the speed of light and you turn your headlights on, does anything happen? And the answer is, your question contradicts Einstein's special theory of relativity, which states that no object with mass can travel at or above the speed of light, c. As your car approaches c, its resistance to acceleration, that's mass, increases so that it would take an impossibly infinite source of energy to actually reach c. Your question then is based on an impossible premise. It's like asking, what would happen if I reached the North Pole and kept going north? So as you approach the speed of light with your headlights on, here's your answer. As you approach the speed of light with your headlights on, however, you would still measure the light beam racing away from your car at 186,000 miles per second. That's C. A stationary observer watching this happen, though, would not then measure the beam's speed at almost twice C. Relativity says that all observers always get the same measurement for C.
C squared.
No, just
so how big a Jado do I need to strap onto my Mazda to make it go anywhere near C?
That's just an urban myth. That's it.
Yeah. No. You're going to need a lot of.
You'll hit the mountain.
Yeah.
You're going to need to invest in a different kind of energy propulsion system for
that's the argument that you, as your speed increases, you need the exponential energy and you can't possibly create the amount of energy. Yeah, that's the whole.
You're going to need to invent quantum drive, Ben. That's the only way to do it.
I guess I better get to it then.
But if you do that, then you might as well just invent a time machine.
Well, that has uses
too. Out of
too.
A DeLorean. Right. Oh, we're back to cars.
Yeah, all right. We've come full
person,
circle.
Just to round out the answer here, and I know we're running out of time, she says, this person says, I preface my answer with this comment because it leads immediately to the answer to the question. Imagine that you're in a car traveling at the speed of light and that you turn on your headlights. That state of motion is utterly equivalent to being at rest in an empty universe. Since when at rest, the light from your headlights would be launched forward from your car at the speed of light relative to you. With a certain color spectrum, that is exactly what would happen if somehow you could be moving instead at the speed of light. In other words, the presence or absence of other objects or matter in the universe relative to which if present, you could make a determination that you were moving at the speed of light makes absolutely no difference to your own experiences and experiments. The lights that you launch behaves in the same way whether the other referential matter exists or not. There's your answer.
So for the two listeners who are still awake,
don't fall asleep while driving.
If I'm going to build a time machine, I'm not going to use a DeLorean. I'm going to use a big old truck so I can bring stuff back.
But I love DeLoreans.
Oh, yeah, they're pretty cool, but they're not very practical for carrying things.
No.
That's very true.
You have to have a stainless steel thing to do whatever Doc Brown said.
That's right. He was talking about the composition of the external sheet metal.
Yeah. So if we have any listeners who have traveled near the speed of light, tell us what happened when you turned on your headlights. And if we have any listeners who want to help us make a time machine, please contact us via our Facebook page or via our website, thethingaboutcars.com. Yes, Becca?
We're obviously making entries for the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
So, yes.
Thanks as always for joining us. This has been The Thing About Cars. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road. We'll be right back.